us within minutes. Afterward, he leaned out of his office door and ordered one of the beastkin standing guard to ready a horseless carriage. Then he returned to his paperwork, but his mind was elsewhere. Nathan's father wasn't his true father, at least not in his memories. When he had been sent back in time, Nathan had taken over the life of a different man. Nathan was born Nathan Martell and had replaced a man called Nathan Straub. But it wasn't just the name that matched between this timeline and the last. Nathan's father had been a bastion in his timeline, and somehow his new father was also a bastion. Both fathers wanted little to do with their son, although for radically different reasons. Both were politically active. Both had deep-seated issues with non-humans. And Nathan had become a sort of wunderkind bastion in both timelines. He found it strange how history seemed to be repeating itself, even as he took over somebody else's future. A knock sounded at the door, and Nathan realized he had lost himself in thought. He looked up and saw a gorgeous woman slip inside his office. She wore a black and crimson dress that hugged her figure. She referred to it as a Chung Sam, and it was a normal garment in her homeland. Slits were cut high into the sides of the dress, revealing plenty of olive skin. Her black hair hung freely down to her waist and shimmered in the light of the room as she approached Nathan.
"One day you're going to spend too long staring at a woman's assets, and they're going to stab you while you're sizing up their breasts," the woman said.
She slipped on top of Nathan's desk. "It hasn't happened yet," Nathan said, "and I wasn't looking at your chest." It was modest, and her dress greatly accentuated its appearance. A pair of jade gems sat in her collarbone. They were the mark of her power. Seraph was Nathan's only duo gem champion, and she held an important position in his hierarchy as a result. Also, she was far more experienced than his other champions. Fei and Sen were both young and newly recruited, and his other champion, Sunstorm, lacked talent and interest in anything that didn't involve stabbing things or cutting off heads. If Nathan's brain melted overnight and he became incapable of doing anything except fighting, Seraph could run things well enough that he doubted anybody would notice his absence. In fact, they'd probably be impressed at how much smoother things ran without Nathan procrastinating on his paperwork.
"You should," Seraph said. "It's rather easy to hide a small blade in even my chest. Staring at my legs for too long leaves me plenty of openings."
"Is there anywhere safe to stare at you without leaving an opening?" Nathan asked.
"At my back, while I'm on all fours, I imagine. Not that I've tested that."
Seraph smirked. Nathan didn't rise to her provocation. Unlike his other champions, Seraph's teasing was just that. Teasing. "Anna's returned. She's in a foul mood, but has some news from the Diet," he said, rising from his chair. "There's a carriage prepared outside."
"Are we taking anybody else?"
"Should we?" Seraph paused as they stepped into the corridor. Her eyes fell on the two wolf girls nervously standing guard outside his office.
"Sen, probably. You seem comfortable telling her a few secrets I don't yet know," Seraph said. "I'd suggest Sunstorm, but I doubt she'd listen to a word that Anna says about politics."
It bothered him that Seraph knew there was something different about Nathan's relationship with Sen and Sunstorm. The two of them had their personalities partially overwritten from his original timeline, and he could therefore talk to them about his foreknowledge. He didn't realize he'd been so conspicuous about it.
"Don't look at me like that. I'm not the only person who's noticed that you tell them more. I can't help but wonder if it has something to do with why they changed sides so quickly and easily."
A smile floated across Seraph's lips. Nathan sent one of the knights off to find Sen. Then he and Seraph made their way outside, making small talk as they walked. A shiver ran along Seraph's body when she stepped outside the warmth of the keep. The sky was overcast, and snow piled up in the corners of the castle courtyard. Soldiers huddled around burning braziers. The courtyard was largely empty and had been cleared of snow that morning. An unattended carriage sat in the center of the courtyard. It had no horses nearby, but it didn't need them. An engine powered by magic resided within the undercarriage. Everyday life on Domar relied on amenities powered by magic, such as this horseless carriage. Enchantments within kettles and lights made life much easier than relying on fire or casting spells individually. Any noble could hook up their home with a magical generator and have lighting at all hours. Even the peasantry had a magical torch or two that allowed them to continue to work and play after dark. The horseless carriage was more complex than most devices, however. The same could be said about the wireless. It contained an internal magical generator and was self-powered. Most magical devices either relied on an external generator or had a limited lifespan. An internal generator gave the horseless carriage longer range, as it didn't need to stop so that horses could rest or to refill magic reserves. But magical generators became temperamental the farther they were from a ley line. This close to the Binding Stone, the horseless carriage could move across the county without limitations. But farther south, in the peaceful farming region that Fay grew up, the horseless carriages were prone to breaking down. The generators relied on magic from the world around them, and the ley lines were the primary source of magic in the world. Nathan didn't know where that magic came from, but he knew that Domar relied heavily on it.
"Figures that she'd make us go to her when it's this cold," Sin grumbled as she joined them outside. "While we're freezing our asses off, she'll be sitting beside a toasty fire."
"She probably went through the same thing coming back from the capital," Nathan said. "Let's go." The trip to Trontia, Anna's hometown and the capital of the county, went well. Trontia itself hadn't changed since Nathan's last visit. He suspected the population had swelled, but the sprawl of the town hid any changes. Pulling up outside Anna's manor, a pair of servants greeted them. Both were Cat Beastkin, and they wore the same black and white vests and pleated pants that they did in spring. Like all Beastkin in the Empire, they were gainfully employed rather than slaves. Working for Anna ensured they were well paid relative to most people in the town.
"Not updating the fashion for your servants?" Nathan asked, as he entered the sitting room that Anna was in.
"No, because nobody can agree on what it is," Anna replied. "Half the nobles of the capital are big on old-fashioned black and white dresses with plenty of frills. But some dislike the fact that the style came from Trefome and are pushing more extravagant styles. It's become quite silly."
"You're telling me that the clothing of servants has become politicized?" Nathan asked.
"Welcome to my time in Alaik," Anna said, rolling her eyes as she referred to the capital of the Anfang Empire. "The complete failure of the Northern Campaign has riled up so much of the nationalist faction that they're lashing out at everybody and everything. They even managed to insult Falmir and cause a minor diplomatic incident."
That caught Nathan's interest. He took a seat on one of the sofas in the room. Seraph and Sen joined him, and a platter of tea and cakes appeared in short order. This room held the same modern look as it had before. Neutral tones, plenty of steel and glass in the furnishings, and ebony wood added in to spice things up. The rest of the manor had been renovated since spring, however. Nathan suspected that Anna had used her absence as an opportunity to improve things. The claustrophobic spaces, ancient wooden furniture, and dated color schemes had vanished from most rooms. If you ignored the exterior, the manor looked almost modern.
"How did the Diet anger Falmir?" Nathan asked.
"Not the Diet exactly," Anna said, nibbling on a cake. "For the most part, we just sat around and argued about what to do now that we were at war with two countries at once. Lots of joint sessions of the colleges. I don't think I've ever sat in the same room as all the Archdukes before."
The Anfeng Empire was a curious place in Nathan's mind. He had grown up in the kingdom of Falmir, which was as straightforward a place as monarchies went. The royal family governed the country, and the nobles ran things on behalf of the king in a relatively straightforward hierarchy. Whereas the empire had webs of nobility. The emperor was elected by the nobles, but usually from the same family several times in a row. The current emperor was one Gortal von Erengar, who was simply known as Emperor Gortal to most. His father had been the first emperor in his family, and it was expected that one of his children would be elected after his passing. But the emperor didn't hold true power, because he was elected. Instead, three archdukes did. Each effectively owned a third of the entire empire. Almost every noble held an oath of fealty to an archduke, either directly or indirectly. Anna was no exception. Sen raised her hand before ducking her head as all eyes turned toward her.
Can we pretend that I'm an uneducated bandit girl that doesn't have a clue how imperial politics works or what this diet really is?
Anna stared at Sen in disbelief.
I mean, I've heard of the diet, Sen blabbered. It's where the nobles all get together to do something. I just don't know anything other than that.
Rubbing her forehead, Anna let out a sigh. Then she glared at Nathan, who shrugged. Fine, I'll give you a brief explanation, Anna said. Aren't I nice? Anna smiled sweetly, daggers hidden behind her expression.
Yes,
Sen said, as she took a noticeably long sip of tea to hide her reaction.
The Imperial Diet is the name for the three colleges, gatherings, really, of nobles that have the right to control the empire, Anna explained. Each college is a forum where the nobles get together and vote on proposals. The real power is with the archdukes, as they control over 90% of all land in the empire. Nobody tells them what to do. I know that much, Sen muttered. How come if the archdukes are so powerful, there's still so much arguing then?
Because even the archdukes have to rely on the many nobles below them, Nathan said, crossing his arms. Like right here. Anna owes fealty to Archduke von Milgar, but he's preoccupied with managing the war to the north. Anna nodded, nibbling on a cake.
Milgar's always ignored me before, but now I've become important. He even asked me to call him Hans in a private meeting. Terrifying,
she shuddered.
He's the only archduke openly opposed to the nationalist faction, and I'm openly aligned with Leopold, so I guess that makes me useful to him. What are the nationalists?
Sen asked. Anna bit her lip and remained silent. People who want the empire to return to what it was when Omria lived in Alaik. The pre-ascension days, in other words, Nathan said bluntly. Back before Trefoam and Falmir split off, and when half the Federation was Imperial territory. Pretty much the only major powers other than the Empire were the Kurai Peninsula, the Spires, and Arcadia back then.
Oh, can the Empire ever become like that again?
Not really, Anna muttered. But Nathan's father would kill me if I said that openly.
All eyes turned to Nathan, who sighed. He waved Anna on. So they brought the colleges together. I take it that didn't improve matters? Nathan asked.
The opposite.
Anna sensed Sen's questioning gaze and sighed.
The three colleges separate the different classes of nobles. The Lord's College consists of all of the counts, and we all have a single vote. The Prince's College is the most powerful one, as only nobles who rule in their own right have a vote. It's basically a glorified cabinet where the archdukes and emperor veto anything that the other nobles do. Finally, there's a city's college, where the counts who govern the cities meet and vote.
That sounds overly complicated, Sen said.
Nathan coughed. If Milgar supported you, what about the other archdukes?
Oh, they hated me. Milgar forced me to speak publicly when they brought everybody together in the palace.
I thought I was going to burst into flames. The other archdukes and half of the assembled nobles were trying to eviscerate me with their eyes.
She shuddered again.
And despite all that, it was a waste of time. Nobody wanted to speak up against the nationalists, even though I suspect most people want these wars to go away.
You might need to explain further about what happened with Trafome, Nathan said, noticing that Sen and Seraph appeared somewhat lost. Or very lost, in the case of Sen. Seraph was sharp, but the intricacies of imperial politics were not her forte, given she came from the Federation. Truthfully, the only reason Nathan knew so much was because he had learned of this in his childhood. As the son of a noble, he had been forced to learn about the different governments of his neighbors.
Right. Anna drained her tea and poured another cup. We attacked the Order of Trafome months behind schedule. His Majesty wanted to reclaim the pearlescent canyon along our northern border, as a symbol that the Empire was ascendant once more in the world. It was something to appease the nationalists. Instead, negotiations dragged on. Then we invaded in the middle of summer instead of spring.
And ran into heavily fortified positions, because Trafome had spent months preparing for an invasion, Nathan said.
Anna agreed. Now the nationalists blame everybody else for delaying the war, while the Emperor's supporters blame the nationalists for not preparing adequately, and say that more time was needed.
Isn't that politics as normal?
Sure, except that you and Leopold just flattened the Federation, accused them of heresy, and are asking for permission and resources to prosecute our claim.
Anna scowled.
You succeeded where the nationalists didn't, and your father is one of their leading figures, and really, really hates you.
She sighed and played with her teacup. Most of the cakes on the platter remained untouched. While Faye demolished any food placed in front of her, Sen and Seraph were pickier with how many sweets they ate. After giving Nathan a sidelong look, Seraph spoke up.
And where does Falmir play into this?
The nationalists made some stupid claims that not being with the Empire meant you were against us. It got out of hand, and their ambassador left the city in protest.
Anna pressed a hand into her cheek.
That's what ruined the last few days. The Federation finally requested to negotiate with us, but salvaging our relationship with Falmir takes priority.
We can't do both, Nathan said.
Didn't we just hear how incompetent the Diet was? Does it sound like the sort of place that can negotiate with two countries at once? Three, if we include Trafome, Seraph said.
Anna rolled her eyes.
Technically, Leopold is supposed to negotiate, but that will go nowhere. High Lord Tanius isn't responding to any of us, after all. I think he's upset about the heresy accusation.
That means he's scared, Nathan said. Good.
That sort of thinking is dangerous, Seraph chided. All this feels too intentional to be a coincidence, or purely the result of political ineptitude.
What?
Anna asked, frowning.
Tanius is refusing to negotiate, but suddenly attempts to at the last second. The nationalists are at a political disadvantage, but then blow up a political relationship with another major power.
Seraph paused, realizing that neither of them were following her.
Tell me, how would you describe our current position relative to when I joined you?
Unchanged. That's my point, Anna said.
Nathan leaned back and looked thoughtful. Sen's attention focused on him, and she took the opportunity to take a cake while she thought nobody was watching. No, we're worse off, Nathan eventually said. The whole point of the heresy accusation was to force the Federation into a weaker position, so that they would either surrender or face the full might of the Empire. But neither is happening.
And why is that? Seraph pushed.
Because the Emperor is too distracted with a larger political fuck-up to negotiate with the Federation. And the Nationalists have successfully prevented anybody from forcing them to withdraw from the North, starving us of resources to fight a war against the Federation. Nathan scowled as he realized the truth. We've been hung out to dry.
Exactly, Seraph smiled. And it's all a little too convenient. The Nationalists played their cards at the right time to frustrate us, and the Federation can even claim they attempted to negotiate. If we're truly unlucky, the fairies may even use that as an excuse to intervene in the conflict.
Anna's jaw hung open, and she looked between Seraph and Nathan.
You're suggesting that the Nationalists are working with the Federation?
They have a common cause, Nathan said bitterly. The Federation doesn't want to surrender or fight a war against the Empire. The Nationalists don't want to lose political face and are building up strength to overthrow Emperor Gortal. So the Emperor is focused on relations with Falmir. The Nationalists have convinced everybody to continue throwing more soldiers into the meat grinder that is Trafoam, and we're on our own, Nathan summed up.
That would be mad of them, Anna grumbled. They failed far too publicly against Trafoam to pull off a coup now. If they keep up their nonsense, the Emperor will be able to publicly back us once Falmir is pacified, and nobody will bat an eye. Plus, we still don't know for sure why the Federation chose to negotiate now rather than earlier.
Like the Empire, the Federation isn't a single cohesive entity, Seraph said. It's possible the Regency Council overruled Tanius. Or perhaps one of the regents is going rogue and reaching out on his own.
Can you find out? Nathan asked.
I'll try. My contacts are sparse now, as it's become public knowledge that I've betrayed the Federation. But money greases plenty of wheels.
The fire in the room continued to burn late into the afternoon, as the four of them chatted about the situation. Sen made the least contributions, as the political nature of the problem overwhelmed her. For the most part, Nathan suspected that Anna wanted company. She lounged and whined for hours. The servants brought out wine, and Nathan indulged alongside her. Although his tolerance was much higher than Anna's, it only took a few glasses for Anna to be drunk enough to need saving.
I believe it is time for Lady Von Clare to retire, one of the catgirl maids said, placing a hand on Anna's shoulder.
The Countess glared up at her servant, but didn't resist.
I understand, Nathan said. It's probably best for us to head back before it gets too dark.
That was a lie. They were in the dead of winter, and a glance out the windows confirmed that it was already black as pitch outside. But nobody protested, and the servant gave Nathan a warm smile in response. Nathan, Sen, and Seraph piled into the carriage and began the ride home. Little of consequence happened, despite the darkness. The bandits that had once plagued Garrick County were largely eliminated, and the few that remained were used as training for Nathan's knights. The fortress was quiet when they arrived. Few people wandered the streets. Hardly a surprise, given the sub-zero temperatures. Their carriage rode through both the outer and inner gates without pausing. Garrick Pass was a fortress split into two layers. The outer layer, where the residential populace lived and worked, and the inner layer, where the keep and main defenses were built atop a hill. A sturdy limestone wall separated both layers. Soldiers kept watch at all hours from the walls.
Finally, warmth, Sen shouted, as she burst into the keep.
The double doors of the entrance slammed into posts that kept them from opening too far, and the booming noise echoed around them. Nathan and Seraph followed more sedately. Within moments, both of them stopped. Their eyes darted around the hall, looking for something that wasn't there. Or, more accurately,
people that weren't there.
Nathan, Seraph muttered.
He didn't respond, too busy diving into the mental world of his binding stone. Using its power, he scanned the castle interior. The results came back within moments, and he scowled as he returned to reality.
Sen, get back here, he shouted.
Seraph waited patiently by his side as his younger champion doubled back, a confused look on her face.
There are intruders in the castle, Nathan said, and I'm pretty sure at least one of them is a mystic fox.
Chapter 5
Seraph's eyebrows shot up.
You can sense that?
It's more accurate to say that I can't sense it, which is what gives it away. Nathan tapped the side of his head. The binding stone gives me complete control over the castle. I can add additional rooms at a whim or slap a staircase in place within minutes. That requires me to know what's happening around me, or else I couldn't control the binding stone without line of sight of what I'm doing.
That's not how most bastions work, you know, Seraph said flatly.
Well, I guess I'm not like most bastions.
I've noticed.
A smile floated on Seraph's lips.
I wouldn't be your champion if you were.
Did her expression sharpen, or was that Nathan's imagination?
Can't say I get it, Sen said.
She tilted her head.
Although I get the feeling you've done this sort of thing before, and explained it in excruciating detail.
Ifrit already knows what I'm about to tell you, Nathan said, referring to the spirit that possessed Sen and granted her supreme power over fire. It's possible to use magic to actively hide from sensory detection magic, but it's not elemental magic, it's a form of spatial magic. And there's only one race who is good enough at it to hide from a bastion inside his castle.
Foxes, Seraph said. They're master illusionists, assassins, and mage killers, as a result. You say you can sense a void?
When I try to scan the entrance to the basement, I can't sense anything. Not the walls, not the door, or its enchantments. Not the summons that should be guarding it. Nathan shrugged. That's a surefire sign that somebody is using spatial magic to cut me off. Demons can use it, so it's something I need to be able to detect. Nathan walked forward, and the two women followed. Neither had their proper weapons on them. While Seraph usually used tonfas and Sen a greatsword, they were clumsy tools to carry around everywhere. Both of them carried a simple enchanted longsword. Far from an ideal situation to fight mystic foxes, but Seraph was a duo gem champion. Of course, that only applied if the intruder wasn't also a powerful champion. That void prevented him from learning anything about them, so he was going in blind. Perhaps he should head farther inside the keep and call for help from his other two champions. The entrance to the basement was only around the corner, however. Nathan's curiosity was piqued, and the intruder surely knew he had returned. Sen's loud entrance had made sure of that. The three of them rounded the corner, weapons drawn. A long staircase led down to the basement. At the very bottom was a solid steel door. Runes glowed on it as a visual indicator of the enchantment that Nathan had cast on the door to prevent intrusion. The enchantments only opened the door for those who Nathan had granted access to, and those were a limited few. Nobody stood in front of the door. A pair of bulky knight summons stood guard outside, staring at nothing in particular. Not a sound could be heard, and no damage was visible. Seraph and Sen frowned. Sen's free hand glowed, and he felt her reach out with her magic. A moment later, she shook her head at him. With a raised eyebrow, Seraph looked at Nathan.
Tell me, what do you find wrong with this picture? Nathan asked.
Sen tilted her head to one side. She looked down the stairway, her eyebrows furrowed. Seraph's lips quirked upward.
I'm not a sorcerer, so I can't pick up whether something is off or not. But everything looks fine to me.
She paused for effect.
Except for one thing.
Nathan waited for her to continue, but she didn't. He waved a hand in the air in exasperation, urging her to go on. Do you have to be like this?
I'm imagining the tension this must be causing.
Seraph laughed.
But fine. You mentioned you couldn't sense the summons guarding the gate, so I tried to command them. No response. I'm not very good at controlling your summons yet, but I'm not so incompetent that I can't order them around when they're literally in front of my face.
The summons that Nathan created with the Binding Stone were mentally tethered to him. Seraph and his other champions had a similar connection due to the gems implanted in their collarbones, which bonded them to him for life and granted them their immense power. Using that connection, Seraph could give orders to Nathan's summons. His champions tended to be rather clumsy at it, as they weren't trained to command summons or control magic using mental commands. But as Seraph said, both she and Fay were more than capable of ordering around the summons if they had line of sight.
You can't order them around because they've been destroyed, I imagine, Nathan said, crossing his arms. Their true state is covered up by illusion magic.
Should we confirm by touch?
Seraph suggested, her eyes twinkling with mirth. Are you trying to get me killed? She giggled, much to Sen's confusion. Nathan sighed. If our uninvited guests are talented, then the summons will feel real to the touch, but there is no way for them to detect our mental commands. He raised his voice. I know you can hear us. Stop wasting our time and show yourselves. No response. Sen gripped her sword nervously, looking between Nathan and the bottom of the stairway. By contrast, Seraph twirled her sword and placed a hand on her hips.
They have to be here, Nathan muttered.
What if they're not? Sen asked.
Then they've escaped. I can't sense anything closer to the Binding Stone.
Sen nodded slowly. She licked her lips.
Then I'll flush them out.
Wait, what?
Sen, don't... Ignoring him, Sen cast a fourth-rank spell. A glowing square of red light appeared in front of her open palm, and flames fountained down the staircase. Fire consumed Nathan's vision within moments, but the fire never reached the bottom. It slammed into an invisible barrier of force and bounced off. Jets of flame spiraled every which way, scorching the walls and melting the decorations on the walls. The spell threatened to bounce back up the stairs at any moment.
Stop that, Seraph snapped.
She raised her sword, the jades in her chest glittering, as she prepared to use her gem abilities to destroy Sen's spell. The flames vanished in a moment, and Sen lowered her arm. Her eyes were wide, her expression lost in shock at the fact her spell was so easily blocked. She hadn't even seen her opponent's spell. Their opponents were visible now, however. A man and a woman stood at the bottom of the stairs. The summons were in ruins, and the door showed signs of damage. Nathan felt relieved to see that the runes still glowed on its metallic surface. The intruders hadn't broken through. That was the only good sign Nathan took from the intruders. Nathan vaguely recognized the man, but not by name. His face was familiar, which likely meant they had fought together in the past. Nathan knew this because there were a pair of red garnets in his collarbone. If he was a duo gem champion, then that meant he was from the Federation. The familiarity that Nathan felt likely stemmed from the fall of the Federation in his timeline. He must have fought alongside this particular champion at some point. But it was the other champion that truly caught Nathan's attention. 6 silver foxtails, long silver hair past her shoulders, and a twitching pair of fox ears. A pair of sapphire gems in her collar. A slim, buxom frame hidden by a dark blue robe in the fashion of the Kurai Peninsula. Although Nathan suspected that most women from her homeland didn't tailor their robes to hug their figures and reveal so much thigh.
The fox's bright blue eyes stabbed at Nathan, but he didn't look away. He knew this woman. Narime. What was she doing here? Silly question. She worked for the Federation, and he was their enemy. She was bound to appear at some point. He had merely hoped that her arrival would take place later, when he was better prepared to deal with her. Right now, fighting two duo gem champions was a tough call. He had Seraph, but the rest of his champions were only mono gems. The gap created by each gem a champion received was enormous. Each gem provided an exponential increase in power for a champion, as well as new abilities and powers. Not only were Narime and the male champions stronger than Fei and Sen, but they also had tricks at their disposal that most of Nathan's champions didn't. Wait, Nathan began to say, holding up a hand. Narime didn't let him finish. Her hands thrust forward, palms together, and a glowing golden pentagram appeared in front of them. Her tails glowed, and the surrounding stones lit up with white incandescent light. The sapphires in her chest remained dull. A moment later, the pentagram exploded into a furious flash of light. Seraph cursed and raised her sword. Nathan was faster, already prepared for Narime's spell. As the pentagram vanished into motes of golden light, time slowed to a crawl. Nathan's body was frozen, but he still perceived everything perfectly. He had entered the mental world of his binding stone, but this time he focused his physical senses. Sen's eyes widened millimeter by millimeter. Seraph's muscles rippled in slow motion, the fabric of her Changsam frozen in space. Both of her jades glowed brilliantly, and Nathan saw the glow of her gem ability focus in her longsword. When time resumed, a blast of magic would fly from her sword and attempt to destroy the spell that Narime had cast. Nathan was uncertain whether Seraph's gem ability could overpower Narime's spellcasting ability. His champion was very powerful, and her magic blasts obliterated any spell weaker than her own magic. But if Narime's spell had even the tiniest ounce of magic more than Seraph could output, the blast would have minimal effect. And Narime was a very powerful magic user. She had one tail less than Nathan remembered her having, but otherwise she was identical to his memories of her. As a mystic fox, Narime was already a more powerful sorceress than almost any other race on Domar. Her tails glowed with immense magical reserves that she drew on to empower her spells, and they let her cast fifth and sixth rank spells at terrifying speed. Where Nathan practically exhausted himself with a single fifth-rank spell without topping up his reserves, Narime could go all day on the things. And he couldn't discount her sapphires as well. Each type of gem gave champions a different type of magical enhancement or ability. Sapphires provided gem abilities to champions, which made them difficult to anticipate and counter. A gem ability granted a champion a spell or technique they otherwise couldn't use. In Fei's case, she controlled a magical flame. In Narime's case, her gem abilities let her empower her spells with nasty abilities. Fortunately for Nathan, Narime hadn't used her gems. If she had, then he would have been in a lot of trouble. Reaching into his binding stone, Nathan pushed magic into the castle's floor. He then pushed some into the walls beside Narime and the male champion. His handiwork completed, Nathan let time flow freely. Seraph's blast of magic slammed into Narime's spell. The two met explosively in midair, and Seraph's wave of shimmering magical energy vanished into nothingness. The golden light of Narime's spell was no longer visible. Nathan grabbed Seraph's arm and pulled her back. She growled at him and pushed him behind her, shielding him with her body. Both of them were on the same page, kind of. A wall of stone burst forth from the floor at the top of the staircase, cutting them off from Narime. Shouting came from the other side, and Nathan heard Narime saying somebody's name. Before he could concentrate on what the name was, the wall exploded into chunks. Dust filled his vision.
Sen screamed and fired off a jet of flame down the stairway. In response, something blew apart several slabs of stone in the wall above them. Alarms began to sound in the keep automatically in response to the damage. High-pitched bells rang out across the interior of the hall. Raised voices called out for the guards, who were supposed to be on patrol. Angry shouts followed as people realized that the patrol wasn't responding. Nathan scrambled forward, Seraph clinging to his arm. She cursed at him.
"Are you trying to get yourself killed?" she shouted.
He stood at the top of the stairwell, trying to see down.
"Get rid of the dust," he ordered.
With a wave of her hand, Seraph vaporized the dust surrounding them. His vision clear, Nathan saw the result of his earlier trick. The male champion was bleeding from the head, barely able to stand. Nadime helped him to his feet, but he leaned heavily on her. A pair of stone blocks jutted out from the walls. Nathan had summoned them into being while he had slowed time. Clearly, Nadime had dodged one, but the male champion hadn't. Nadime spotted him and raised a hand. In response, Seraph darted forward. Their spells met in midair again. Seraph went flying backward, and Nathan caught her. Her expression twisted in pain, and he felt the magic within her body at work. Unlike most spells, Narime's magic wasn't of the natural elements. She controlled raw force. The golden glow of her spells was a sign that she had mastered an ascended element of the world, which was normally something only bastions and messengers were capable of. Almost all sorcery used by humans used the natural elements, such as wind, water, earth, and fire. But there were other kinds of sorcery. Sometimes these were referred to as the intrinsic elements, because they were part of the nature of reality itself. But Nathan had normally seen it referred to as ascended magic, or the ascended elements. One of these elements was force, and that was what Narime used. The result was that Seraph's bones were broken, and her organs had been pummeled. Raw blasts of force did awful things to human targets. Fortunately, Seraph had an incredibly powerful regenerative ability. Within a few moments, she was standing and flexing her arms.
"What a way to greet an old friend, Narime," Seraph said.
"I'd say that in return. But are we really friends?"
Narime responded.
Her eyes flitted from Seraph to Nathan.
"We're professionals, aren't we? Surely we can be responsible adults and agree that we can be friends, while still admitting that we have to kill each other for reasons beyond our control," Seraph said. "Although I'm beginning to wonder how much is really beyond our control. Life's quite different on this side."
The shouting of reinforcements grew closer, and Nathan heard Faye's voice. Narime's shoulders hunched, and her eyes looked past him. Glancing behind him, he saw that Sen now stood behind him.
"As interesting as this is, I'm afraid that this isn't the best time," Narime said.
Her sapphires glowed, and she raised her hands. If Nathan let her finish that spell, then she'd vanish. He hadn't planned for this, but this was the first chance he had found in this timeline to be close to Narime. How could he let her slip away so easily?
"Wait," he shouted. "This can't be all you came here for."
Narime's lips quirked upward.
"And here I thought you decided to serve a smart bastion, Seraph. Given where I'm standing, you know exactly what I came here to do."
"Don't act dumb," Nathan said. "We all know you couldn't do a thing to the Binding Stone."
"You don't know the first thing about what I can do," Narime said.
"I know that you're about to use your sapphires to penetrate my keep's protective wards and teleport away," Nathan said. "Tell me why you're really here, Narime."
The fox stared at him in shock. Hardly unsurprising, given he had just identified one of her secret gem abilities. For a champion, their enhancements and gem abilities were the key to victory.
Knowing what your opponent was capable of allowed you to plan around them. So some champions actively lied about their gems in order to prevent others from realizing what was happening. Narime always told people that her gems enhanced the power and range of her spells. In truth, her gem abilities were all about anti-magic. Her spells could penetrate barriers and protective wards, and she could counter practically any spell.
How? Narime trailed off, her eyes drifting over to Seraph.
You're not as good at keeping secrets as you think you are, Nathan said, hoping that Seraph didn't spoil things. For her part, Seraph simply smiled back at Narime. The fox scowled, then looked at Nathan.
Fine. You know what I'm capable of.
So? She asked.
You're not here to break into my basement. I doubt you were even here to attack me, given you're not trying to kill me right now, Nathan said. If you were, you would have thrown much nastier spells at me than simple force blasts. You didn't even empower your spells with your gem abilities.
Narime frowned.
You attacked us before I could speak.
You were hiding under an illusion, Nathan pointed out. Wincing, Narime glanced to the side and coughed. She muttered under her breath, but he didn't hear it. Seraph did, and laughed in response.
I didn't quite hear that, Nathan said.
I'm not repeating it, Narime said.
Seraph rolled her eyes and said,
She wanted to make a better entrance. All pride, this little fox. Now that you're exposed, why don't you just admit why you're here?
A long pause followed, accompanied by Narime attempting to punch a hole through Seraph's head with her eyes. The two women seemed to forget that they had been battling moments ago, and that guards were charging right toward them now. Good friends, evidently. So why hadn't Narime ever mentioned Seraph in his timeline?
If you have the time, Bastian Nathan, I'd like to talk to you about the war, Narime said. Negotiations haven't started yet, and I think that's unwise for both sides.
Nathan stared at her. You broke into my castle to ask me to negotiate? Narime's face reddened, but she refused to drop her gaze.
Yes, of course. We can talk.
Goddess, Nathan muttered, rubbing the bridge of his nose. Seraph laughed, and Sen looked confused. When Fay ran up to them, a dozen fully armed and armored beastkin knights with her, she didn't know what to do.
Are we fighting anybody? Fay asked. And who blew up the wall?
Nathan clapped her on the shoulder. Don't worry about it, but you will need to increase the patrols. He turned back to Narime, ignoring the very confused cat girl. We'll get your friend some medical attention, then talk things out. I'm keen to hear why a Federation champion is organizing negotiations when Tanius isn't. From the way Narime's eyes flashed at the mention of Tanius's name, Nathan knew he had struck a nerve. Things were not well in the Federation. Chapter 6 Seraph flicked the light switch on as she entered the room. A magic lamp encased within a steel cage lit up the room. Empty bookcases lined one wall, a cabinet in between them. Unlike the bookcases, the cabinet was occupied. A myriad of glasses, cutlery, fine china, and ostentatious knick-knacks filled out a glass display in the upper half of the cabinet. The bottom half was hidden behind aged oak doors and contained an unhealthy amount of alcohol. The center of the room was filled by sofas and a round glass coffee table. Like most of the coffee tables in the castle, this one had the winged emblem of the Watcher Omria engraved into it with gold and silver. The engravings sparkled in the light from above it. Seraph strode past the iced-over window and made for the cabinet. Bending over, she opened it up and began peering at the bottles.
I forget, Narime, Seraph said after a few moments. What's your preferred drop? We don't have any sake, too expensive given the current trade issues with the Federation.
Narime ignored her duo-gem counterpart. She warily stepped up behind one of the plush purple sofas, sinking a hand into its leather backing. Her tail spread out behind her, a sign that she was relaxing, despite herself. The door clicked shut behind Nathan as he entered, and he glanced back to see Faye locking it. She maintained an innocent expression as he gave her a quizzical look. Deciding that she could stay, he returned his attention to Narime. The fox split her attention between Seraph and Nathan. Her eyes narrowed.
You're asking me whether I'm going to drink alcohol when I'm surrounded by three enemies?
Narime asked. Seraph rolled her eyes.
You're the one who wandered in here to negotiate to begin with. Aren't you the master diplomat? Or are you going to refuse a drink offered by your host?
A host without any sake, Narime said flatly. Not really the apex of hospitality, is it?
How often did your clan elders offer mainland drinks to visitors when they visited the peninsula? Not very often, I imagine, Seraph said.
She pulled out a bottle of white wine and pursed her lips. After a moment's contemplation, she shook her head and returned it.
That was different. We were...
Narime cut herself off with a grimace.
Proud, independent people who knew better than everybody else how amazing we were? Oh yes, that worked out well for the Kurai Peninsula, didn't it?
Seraph laughed mirthlessly.
I lost my home, my parents, and everything I ever knew. Millions died. Countless more were forced to flee across the sea to a mainland that they had looked down on. Yes, it was different.
Narime looked away. Seraph, enough, Nathan said.
You're good at saying that, Seraph noted.
Saying what?
The word enough. Or simply telling people when you think they've gone too far, Seraph said.
She shrugged and didn't elaborate, instead returning to the topic at hand.
Maybe try some pear schnapps and expand your palate.
Narime nodded. Her tails curled in behind her as she slipped into the single-seater sofa at one end of the coffee table. Nathan noticed that her eyes lingered on the door, which was blocked by both himself and Faye. Taking the hint, Nathan dragged the beastkin to a sofa. Instantly, Narime relaxed. Her tail spread out across the arms of the sofa, and her silver fox ears no longer stood bolt upright above her head.
You'll take care of Joran's wound?
Narime asked. That must be the name of the male champion she came here with. Nathan nodded, and Narime looked satisfied enough. An uncomfortable silence settled over the room, broken by the constant clinking of glasses and bottles in the corner. After a minute, Seraph carried over a tray of drinks. Pear schnapps for both Seraph and Narime, whiskey for Faye, and a few fingers of a deep amber brandy that Nathan thought he had hidden better. He scowled at Seraph.
For somebody who spends most of their time in Fort Tobram, you're rather good at finding my hiding spots.
I am a spymaster. That means I started as a spy. And I don't think you've ever trained as one, given how terrible you are at devising hiding places.
Seraph rolled her eyes.
Honestly, I don't know why you like that stuff anyway. It's like drinking a tree.
Faye put down her half-empty glass of whiskey and sniffed Nathan's glass. Her cat ears pricked up, and she let out a hum of approval. Nathan snatched the glass from her hand before she slurped it down and ignored her growl of annoyance.
That's cognac, isn't it? Narime noted.
Cognac?
Faye asked.
Expensive brandy from Trafome, Narime said. The Federation has a significant investment in the region that grows it. I understand the more expensive bottles can go for the price of a small house.
Faye stared at the glass in Nathan's hand. He rolled his eyes. That's not a very good benchmark in the Empire.
There are dresses that can buy a small house in most towns. But yes, the bottle is rare. Even rarer now because the Empire is at war. I had to lean on Leopold to get my hands on it.
And by lean on, Nathan meant get him really, really drunk. Leopold was Nathan's immediate superior as a bastion, and the Emperor's right-hand man. That made him very wealthy and influential. Fortunately for Nathan, Leopold was a man of significant vices, and that allowed Nathan to rely on the old man to better enjoy his own luxuries. Narime raised an eyebrow, then sipped her drink. Her lips thinned, but otherwise her expression remained unchanged. Nathan knew that she had likely not tried many mainland liquors. He had enjoyed introducing her to new and exciting food and drink, given her homeland bias.
"To business?" she asked.
"Of course," Nathan said.
"I have a question first," Seraph asked.
"Do you really?" Narime asked acidly.
"Why were you trying to break into the basement?"
Seraph continued, ignoring the fox. Narime's eyes narrowed.
"You expect me to answer that while surrounded by the three of you?"
"Don't pretend you're in any danger. Nathan already pointed out that you can teleport away in an instant. You're a big bad duo gem fox, and we're here to talk."
Seraph tipped her glass slightly toward Narime.
"So?"
Close to a minute passed in silence. Narime sipped at her drink, appearing to grow somewhat fond of it. She waved her hand and summoned the bottle from the cabinet to the table. It appeared on top of the glass with a clink, and Nathan's senses prickled at the blatant display of power. Faye squawked and rose to her feet, a hand falling on her scimitar. Across from her, Seraph continued to down her own drink. Nathan was certain that she had frozen in the moment that Narime had cast her spell. The only hint that Narime had cast a spell was that her hand had glowed. No lines or symbols had appeared around her. Teleporting the bottle from the cabinet had been so trivial to Narime that she could do it with a first-rank spell, which involved only the use of raw magical power. Nathan pulled Faye down onto the sofa. The beastkin blinked at him in surprise, then glared at Narime. Pretending to focus her attention on pouring another glass, Narime looked at Nathan through the corner of her eyes. She frowned when he didn't react to her provocation.
"I'd appreciate it if you showed more respect," Nathan said. "As I said earlier, I'm well aware of your powers. You don't need to insult me by using magic in my domain."
Narime inclined her head and raised her glass.
"I apologize. It seems you weren't bluffing earlier. But that only makes me more suspicious of you. The spatial magic of mystic foxes is poorly understood in Western Domar, but this fortress is full of it."
Shit. So Nathan had fucked up by using spatial magic through the binding stone. Narime had taught him the principles of spatial manipulation, but nothing about how they were unique to mystic foxes. He had assumed that other bastions had picked up the method over the centuries.
"Is that what you were investigating?" Nathan asked, keeping his face expressionless.
"Among other things. The fortress feels off slightly, as if there's something here that I can almost sense, but simply can't."
Narime shook her head.
"I doubt you understand it. I've been alive for over 3 centuries, and my instincts are very well honed. When something is off magically, it can be difficult for me to comprehend. Imagine if you walked into a room that looked like any other, but you knew that something was wrong. Wouldn't you investigate it?"
A chill ran down Nathan's spine, but he crushed his fear mercilessly. Whatever Narime was sensing was faint enough that all she felt was a vague sense of wrongness. Even if she could sense Kadria, it didn't matter if she couldn't find the messenger. But Nathan took this as a warning shot that there were beings in this world that could sense his connection to the demon,
He needed to speak to Kadria about this the next time they met.
Did you find anything, or is this just your mystical foxy senses?
Seraph asked, a mocking smile on her lips. Fay frowned, turning toward Nathan. He ignored her and instead watched Naughty May's reaction closely.
The defenses on the door were too strong, hence why I find you suspicious.
Naughty May pointed an accusatory finger at Nathan, spilling a few drops of schnapps on the table. Seraph clicked her tongue at the mess.
As you said, I can penetrate any defenses with my teleportation magic. Then why didn't you? Seraph asked.
Naughty May ignored her and continued.
But the defenses around your binding stone are specifically crafted to keep out mystic foxes.
No, they're not, Nathan said.
Really?
Narime's voice oozed disbelief. They're crafted to keep out messengers. The reaction was as if he had put a sledgehammer through the table. Seraph and Narime froze, their eyes widening and muscles tensing. Narime's foxtails coiled closely behind her. Faye didn't react as strongly, instead tilting her head in confusion.
Why is it so important to defend the binding stone from a messenger? If they get out of the portal, haven't we already failed?
Both Seraph and Naughty May turned their eyes toward the beastkin, then back to Nathan. Seraph's eyes narrowed.
You've told her about messengers?
I plan to talk to you about them shortly, Nathan said. Seraph cursed.
This is why Sen asked me to investigate the portal at Fort Tabram, isn't it?
Nathan nodded.
You're talking rather openly about a topic that is usually discussed much more secretively,
Narime said. She was right about that. The knowledge that a messenger was coming was not one usually shared widely, let alone with a country he was at war with. But this was Narime. You're here to negotiate, aren't you? Nathan asked.
I'm here to convince you to start negotiations,
Narime hedged, her eyes narrowing. Then I imagine you want to know why negotiations haven't started.
I already know that. It's because you levied a heresy accusation at Tonius, and...
Narime trailed off, and her eyes widened.
Oh. Oh, indeed. Seraph muttered, draining her glass.
She poured another and topped up Nadime's.
Allow me to give you a word of warning.
As if I need a warning from you, Nadime said.
Oh, and why is that? You've always been willing to take my advice before when it comes to politics.
Seraph smiled.
That was before you changed sides.
Nadime glanced between Nathan and Seraph.
You have no idea the difficulty you've caused me.
I can imagine. That's why I'm warning you,
Seraph said. No response. The window rattled from the wind outside, but everybody ignored it. Seraph continued.
Right now, you can maintain a blissful ignorance about Tonius and the Federation. You're smart enough to be suspicious, but still loyal to the nation that took you and so many of our people in. That means you're still useful to Tonius. But once you hear what Nathan has to say, you'll be compromised.
Do you think me some impressionable teenager who will be swayed by a good story and honeyed words from the first attractive male I see?
Narime scoffed and gave Nathan an upturned look. I'm glad I classify as the first attractive male you've seen, Nathan said. Narime rolled her eyes.
I'm serious, Narime, Seraph pressed. Once you find out the truth, you'll step into a new world, and there's no going back. You'll question everything you hear from Tonius, everything that happens in the Federation. You'll no longer be useful to them.
I'm still a powerful and influential duo-gem champion,
Narime insisted. And replaceable. Duo-gem champions are still very replaceable,
Seraph said, her tone dropping.
At least they are to a nation.
Her gaze shifted to Nathan.
You've changed, Narime said.
Not really, but I want to change,
Seraph shrugged.
And I can tell you haven't changed. So I'll remind you of your real position in the Federation. The regents that you like to think of as equals and talk back to at meetings, most of them think of nothing more than ramming their cock down your throat every time you speak. I doubt Tonius is one of them, but he won't need to go far to find a regent who would be happy to have you as one of his maids.
You're a bitch, Narime spat.
Am I wrong?
Narime slammed her glass down, spilling alcohol everywhere as it slid across the table. For a few moments, she seemed torn between storming off and staying put. Perhaps she wanted to hit Seraph, who stared back at Narime with a raised eyebrow. Eventually, Narime calmed down, and she schooled her expression. She winced and apologized to Nathan.
Whatever the case, I want to hear the truth, the fox said. If a messenger is involved, then it is my duty as a mystic fox and as a champion to resolve the situation. Ignorance may benefit my position, but it does not benefit the world.
Seraph shrugged, then inclined her head at Nathan. One thing stuck out in Nathan's mind as he watched the women lounge on the sofas. Why had Seraph never been brought up in his timeline? Narime evidently had a strong relationship with her rival champion, even if nobody would describe it as friendly. Sunstorm idolized Seraph. Hint after hint had been dropped that Seraph was far more aware of how binding stones worked than most bastions were. Even Tonius relied upon her when she was his agent. But at no stage had anybody brought her up, and he couldn't recall any events that sounded like Seraph had been involved. It was as though she had been a ghost in his timeline.
Well? Narime asked, an eyebrow raised.
She crossed her legs, the thigh slits in her dress opening up to reveal plenty more leg.
What does the cause of this war and the protections against messengers have in common?
Her pose was so Narime that Nathan's vision wavered for a moment. He didn't see the fox sitting in a tiny receiving room inside this fortress, out in the boonies of the Empire. Instead, he pictured her sitting opposite him in his bedroom back in the far reaches, a roaring fireplace crackling as it lit up the room. Her ageless face barely changed in the decade plus that he was a bastion, and although she was one tail short, he knew that the woman drinking schnapps was the same one that he had fallen in love with in his timeline. Nathan took a large draught of his cognac before placing his drink on the table. The clink of the glass caused Faye's tail to snap to one side and her eyes to prick up, and she watched him carefully. She had been almost completely silent so far, but her attention was sharp.
As you guessed earlier, the heresy accusation is at the heart of it all, Nathan explained. The current unstable state of the portal in Garrick Pass is a direct result of the Federation's assault.
Is that the Federation's fault, or yours for failing to protect the fortress?
Narime pressed. Her eyes narrow as she took the offensive.
I want to say you're cute for going on the attack, but you're so off the mark that it feels awkward,
Nathan shot back. Narime's eyebrows shot up, and she hid her expression by taking another slug of her schnapps. Too big of a slug, given she nearly coughed it back up. Rolling her eyes, Seraph topped up Narime's glass.
Is she going to be all right?
Faye whispered into Nathan's ear, her eyes wide and staring at Narime's very full glass of spirits.
I can hold my liquor, thank you very much, Narime said, and my hearing is as sharp as yours.
She ran a finger along her silver fox ears, and Fay reflexively copied the motion with her own tufted cat ears.
Foxes are magical beings, like beastkin, but with a lot more magic, Nathan said. It takes a lot more alcohol to affect them, although you are drinking a lot of schnapps.
He sighed.
But back to my point. The Federation actively disrupted the ley lines in the months leading up to their assault. Although I stopped the worst-case scenario, months of demonic energy was unleashed in a single reverse cascade.
Narime stared blankly at Nathan. He paused in his explanation and glanced at Seraph, who shrugged back at him.
You understand what I'm talking about, don't you? Nathan asked,
hoping that he was wrong.
I know what a cascade is, Narime muttered.
Her lips thinned.
But I don't know what the ley lines have to do with heresy, or what a reverse cascade is. Ley line disruption is a common tool in warfare, as it shuts down magical communications and makes detection of covert activities harder. What makes it heretical?
You don't know?